You know, we keep hoping for respect, and right now we're 23 years this week since Desert Storm started, and we thought we'd go back and look at what happened with the war and everything, some things that events that are transpiring, and how do we look at this whole idea of what happened in Desert Storm and since then? I mean, respect is what you get from the Progressive Radio Network, get information and education, and a lot of respect and education from all of us. We only wish that we could get the same thing from the Department of Defense and the VA. It's a non-any storm. Denise, welcome back. You've had a nice long vacation.
Thank you, Doug. And did you say 23 years? This is actually, we headed over there in 1990 with the invasion of Kuwait, and the war kicked off January of 91. So we're actually into our 25th year reunion time.
Man, that is right. Holy cow. A quarter
you missed
of a
two
century.
Years there, Doug. I had to correct you. I thought I heard wrong.
You know, sometimes you lose track of time, and I'm sitting there going, what day is it and where is it? But, I mean, 25 years, a quarter of a century, and we're seeing a non-ending stream of veterans needing care, denial of care, delay in care. I mean, as you guys are aware right now, I tried to get to the burn pit registry and back to the same old tricks. The claim is I never deployed again, so I wasn't eligible for any of that medical care. It's astonishing, the retaliation and everything else, and the hope that we'll just quit and go away and not worry about the veterans, but we can't
okay,
do that.
Okay, a clue there, Doug, that maybe you haven't thought about, and we've been dealing with this online on Facebook, is besides the method to get medical records from your who to contact, there is a way to get your defense finance pay stubs. You have to contact your service branch, financial service branch for Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, and tell them you need a copy of all your records from finance department. Okay? Don't know if you've tried that yet, Doug, but that would show your pay records. And
well, you know what's funny is because we already got the disability from the VA for the deployment to Desert Storm, Iraq, and Saudi Arabia, so it's in the files and the records. It's just
I know. The VA is broken in more ways than we can think of. The registries being a problem to get on it. In Colorado, we only have one environmental coordinator, and that's who you contact to get on the Gulf War Registry, and we encourage others to get on the burn pit, the depleted uranium, you know, all the different registries they have now. I had a talk yesterday. I was in for appointments and went by the VA to correct some problems. And the public affairs officer there is a Gulf War vet that I've known since beginning time, you know. And I went in and talked to him. And what he's getting from VA headquarters, because he's the one that, you know, is there and setting up all the town hall meetings, all the sharing of information, is to push the Camp Lejeune, since they just added presumptives for them. So that is the push now, is to get that word out to veterans that Camp Lejeune has been moving along, adding presumptives. So new push was to concentrate on that. But I talked to him. I said, why don't we do a town hall with all the environmental factors, for, you know, Camp Lejeune, for other bases, for the Gulf War, let's include it all in a big-time push, you know, the first quarter of the year. So he's looking at doing that. He is responsible for getting information out to all the clinics all throughout Colorado. So I bug him frequently. He had been gone on leave. He had a loss of a family member. And so I went looking for him to see if he was back, and he was, and we had to talk about getting this materials out and that the war-related illness, the evaluations that they do for all of them, Vietnam, everything, and much less the, you know, war-related illness for the Gulf War vets. And, you know, to be sure those materials are out and available, there's a flyer for the provider, there's a provider for the veteran, just to be sure that those pamphlets are on clear display in every clinic and every provider's office at the VA. So
you know,
I'm pushing here. We need people in each state doing the same thing.
You keep pushing. I mean, one thing else that came out, I know there was another presidential referendum sign-on law trying to get the president to act is down at Fort McClellan in Alabama, which is an environmental catastrophe and disaster down there. I was down there for the DU project, and we had Project Shad stuff going on down there and everything else. I mean, it's just a nightmare. Then we have, again, trichloroethylene with the recognition now at Camp Lejeune. Trichloroethylene is a major factor, along with the perfluorinated hydrocarbons, at Chinook Air Force Base right here, where I'm speaking from. So it's just an environmental catastrophe, no matter where we look and where we turn, and the delay and denial of care is deliberate. I mean, we found out several weeks ago that they were deliberately and willfully ignoring the environmental monitoring medical reporting requirements from the Department of Defense, with blessing from Kilpatrick's old office. I think Bill Smith is in charge of it now. Yeah. It just never ends. It's an ongoing thing. I mean, Ray, you were back here in the States when Desert Storm started. I mean, you went through hell in Vietnam and everything, and you've been a chaplain. When everything started coming apart 24, 25 years ago, I don't know where time went, what were you thinking and what were you dreaming back here in the States?
Well, my take was like the average American. Only, you know, I think the veterans probably did a lot of deja vu kind of stuff. When they tell you that your country's at war, and we felt very helpless, I think a lot of us would have loved to go back into battle, but we weren't physically or emotionally or any other way able to do that. And it was. And before I go further, Denise, it's good to hear your voice again. And thank you, Doug.
Yeah, I went and checked out and was gone for over a month. I appreciate y'all missing me, but.
Yeah.
We left town December 13th, and we're up in Maryland until we came home about a week ago. And I'll be heading out again, just to warn y'all. There is a VA Research Advisory Committee meeting next Tuesday, if it doesn't get snowed out. I'll be going up for that, then coming home. And the other thing going on in D.C. on Thursday, since we got our bill passed on the Gulf War Memorial, National Desert Storm Memorial, and they have a website, just do your Google site search for National Desert Storm Memorial. And we've had two dedicated people pushing that, Scott Stump, who we've had on previously, and trying to get him lined up to do another talk for us online. But on Thursday, they have a commission meeting, you know, the Monuments Commission, and trying to speak up for the site selection. And, of course, we want it by, you know, the Vietnam Memorial, the World War II, the Korean. We don't want it somewhere else, because we all know when we go to D.C. for be it Memorial Day or Veterans Day, be it almost any day, that's where the veterans go and, you know, they're down there. Even if they've been there a lot of times, they go back by. I've done it several times. Been there for Memorial Days and Veterans Day. And, you know, if I'm up in town and have the time, I always go by. And I'm looking for my Gulf War vets and their caps and anything that signifies them. And I find a lot of them by doing that. But they're having a meeting on Thursday with the commission to talk about where they're going to locate it. And I think that's very important. In fact, what I'd like to do is give out an address. And if you get it in the mail today, it might impact them, but we're asking for short letters to emphasize that we want to be by the other monuments that are war-related. And so the address, let me give that to you slowly. We're meeting on the 28th of January, so if y'all could quickly respond, we'd be helping them. You need to mail it to Peter May, who is the chairman, National Capital Memorial Advisory Commission.
That's a real slow one, Denise.
Yeah, Peter May, chairman, National Capital Memorial Advisory Commission. I'll say that again before I go on with the address. Peter May, Chairman, National Capital Memorial Advisory Commission. The address is 1100 Ohio Drive Southwest, Room 220. 1100 Ohio Drive Southwest, room 220. It's 1100 Ohio Drive Southwest, room 220, Washington, D.C., zip code 20242. That's 20242 in D.C. And just need everyone to grab a piece of paper, an envelope, and write a letter asking them to pick a location for the National Desert Storm War Memorial in Area 1 region of the capital. Okay, that's Area 1 region of the capital. That's where all the other war memorials are. Okay, and then sign your name, your address, you know, state, city, zip code. These letters will help impact them that they're hearing from Gulf War vets that want to see our memorial go up alongside, close to, you know, the area of all the monuments. And there is areas there. If you've been up there, you know the big one is the Lincoln Memorial. You come off the Lincoln Memorial, and you're facing outward, facing the Capitol and the Washington Monument. Over to the right is the Korean War Memorial. Straight ahead of you is the Vietnam Memorial, and the Women's Memorial is part of that. On down the reflecting pool area is the World War II Memorial. That's huge. Off to the side, if you were walking down the reflecting pool past the Vietnam Memorial, off to the side to the right is the District of Columbia World War I Monument. It's a little rotunda. They have cleaned it up since Sergeant Buckles, before he died, he was really active pushing them to clean it up. It's been cleaned up beautifully. I took pictures when I was up there in the summer. They've redone the walkways, the path. They cleared away all the brush so you can see it as you drive along. I mean, if you continue to the right of that area, you go to the Martin Luther King Memorial. You go to Jefferson, which is further down. So it's Martin Luther King and then Roosevelt. FDR's memorial is down on the other side of that street. So there is room there, even if we went over by the World War One D.C. memorial. The other thing that's happening is apparently they're finally going to get a World War One memorial in D.C., not just the District of Columbia one. And besides the World War One memorial that's in Kansas City, and besides the Indianapolis has a beautiful museum and starts with World War One. Haven't been to Kansas City or Annapolis yet to go see those, but I've got it on my list for a springtime trip or something like that. That's a real imperative thing to write that short letter and get it off today so that we have at least letters going to them.
You know, that's an emotional, it's been an emotional trip. I mean, Denise, you and I have both been to up there in Washington, D.C. for Veterans Day, Memorial Day, and you and I both walked over to the Nurses Memorial and the Vietnam War Memorial. And, I mean, Ray, you've got, I don't know, most of your friends in your company on that wall.
Right.
There were many of you, how many, what, seven of you survived out of that battle?
Well, it was, it started out 203, and we had 137 people to walk away from. So we lost 70-some guys dead, and really most of them were physically either really messed up or they were, dead. And but, you know, you look at the total toll, and when we look at that, Doug, I mean, every one of us came out of it messed up somehow. So I don't know how we judge some of those things. When I talk about the Gulf War, I talk about it from almost a civilian's looking at this thing, but it was reflective of the war we're in. I was looking at some figures, too. Since 1965, when Vietnam really began to crank up, there was only 16 years of peace between Vietnam starting and the Gulf War starting. And during that whole time, I mean, we've been at war for 50-some years, just about. It was, 16 years of not being really actually occupying land, but we've got a lot of messed up people coming back. But watching the Gulf War, watching you guys go, there's a little bit of us wanted to go with you anyway. And we were dependent upon the news and the military and different people being really open with us and telling us the truth. And we knew they were taking care of you folks. And we knew we had the best armies and the most, you know, best military people going. And we just assumed you guys were being taken care of. And I've always thought of now that my eyes have been open to a lot of things just by walking with Doug for quite a while. There's just so much the American people need to learn about this situation, because you guys were there. You were watching it. You were part of it. And you can't find a better eyewitness than somebody who was actually there. And I appreciate you guys coming out and just letting us know the way these troops were done and they're still being treated. And we need to do something about that.
It bothers me to no end, because, I mean, when I talked to the chaplain today at the VA, he said the current number, he was right at 23 committed suicide. I mean, that's in the last few days. I mean, that's an astonishing number.
Yeah.
And the indications are probably greater than that, because there isn't a day that doesn't go by where we hear another accident. So with all the neuromuscular, psychiatric, physiological problems and all the medications these individuals are taking, I mean, we know that the motorcycle accident rates, we talked about that on the show, and car accidents rates are astronomical for the veteran. And so we're just seeing, you know, what is happening all over is just, I mean, it's just absolutely horrible. I'm looking at a report. I mean, Jim Binns, great Jim Binns, they did a lot of reports. But back in February 27, 2010, Shinseki put out a report himself acknowledging over 300,000 Desert Storm veterans had gone to the VA seeking care.
Well, and we know that
ours have
been...
That now.
Yeah, because the ones that have been to Iraq and even Afghanistan and rotations to both of them, I mean, even our Facebook page that David Wynette started on Guffawa illnesses, we have a lot of people that were non-deployed, are those that were deployed even after we went and into, you know, 03 with the Iraq invasion again, and Afghanistan, we have a lot of those on that page. And so we try to concentrate on that Facebook page on Gulf War illnesses, on the information, be it about claims, benefits, be it about research, reviewing old reports, because it's amazing to me that people still never read the Regal report back in 94 or the Rockefeller report. And those remain two very, you know, it's like, if you want to start and catch yourself up, if you're just realizing that all these illnesses, all these symptoms are, you know, affecting you and you just never put it together, then I recommend people go back and read Senator Regal's report from 1994, the Rockefeller report in 1994. We had other hearings with the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee that are interesting. We had investigative reports from the investigative unit on the Senate side. We had Shay's hearings on anthrax and separately on Gulf War illness that went on 3 years for each of those. So his reports on Gulf War illness. Much less, the IOM started studying us way back in 94. There are IOM reports all the way back. Okay, we have one pending, should be completed sometime in the next, I would say, 6 months, because the study started in December, and we had two public meetings, and then they went private, and we'll have another public one, I guess, when they finish their study, when they release it. But the two public meetings, a lot of us went up and talked about conditions that needed to be looked at, brain cancers, cardiac problems, other things to add to the presumptive list. So, you know, in about 6 months, we'll probably have a report from that IOM. That's the current one going on right now. We had a big IOM report with Dr. Hauser, who is now chairman of our VA Research Advisory Committee, and that was volume, I'm looking at it right now, volume 8 that came out. I'm looking at it to give you the date it came out, 2010. okay? That was one of the best ones I've seen from the IOM, was Volume 8. These are things that if you are a veteran, family member of a veteran, these are things to Google or get on Gulf War Illness, put in a page search. I bring it up occasionally and bug everybody because we have new people that come in and don't know what's been going on for 25 years. So those are some of the things we keep up with. The IOM is a part of the National Academy of Science, and as all of us know, for the VA to do anything, to add a presumptive, another condition to our list, be it Vietnam, be it Gulf War, be it whatever, it has to be studied, and the VA contracts that study to the National Academy of Science and Institute of Medicine. Along the path, we found out we had to really keep an eye on these people, look at who they were putting on the committee, okay, and being sure that we had good people on the committee, people that believed that it was really physical exposures and not just psychological stress. We've had to protest to them when we've reviewed their initial list of who they have on the committee and have pushed them to change the list and get rid of some that we really have bad vibes about, and put in people that we have, Jim Benz has really worked at dedicated to be sure they put good people on those committees for us. The RAC committee is meeting next week on Tuesday. I'll be there unless the snow stops me from being there. And they do hold that meeting about quarterly. I think April will be held out in San Francisco is what I'm hearing from the rumor mill, although the RAC hasn't announced their schedule past January. And then they'll have another one like September. So January, April, September kind of dates. But they always have a call-in number, and you can call in and listen. Then they open the lines when they are finished with the meeting and people in the room that have traveled to get there. Usually I try to help Dr. Hauser by lining up who's going to speak on public comment and make sure that anybody that's come, particularly if they've never been there before, they're first up to the microphone. You get 5 minutes most at the most. And I usually try to keep everybody less than 5 minutes so we can get as many in as we can, because they do have a close-down time. And then they open up the phone line, and I try to get people that are on the phone line to organize and get on the chat and get themselves in order of who's going to go first and, you know, a list so that they can go quickly through the phone calls. But you can call in with a public comment. These are terribly important to keep up with, whether you listen to them or go back and review their minutes, which they do post after a couple of months. They do post the minutes and presentations. That's under the VA RAC for Illness Research, VARACGWIR. On that page, you can find the past reports that have been put out since 2004, and there was one 2004, 2008. There was one a year ago before Mr. Benz left. Those three critical reports you need to download, read, save, share, everything like that. The minutes and presentations for each meeting are also on that website. And people that are on the committee is listed, their biographies, the mission and purpose of it's there. People, if you're not online, you need to get online, number one. And number two is as soon as Facebook got busy, we set up sites there. I was one of the first ones on in sharing information. We now have people dedicated to doing Twitter tweets. We have people that have gotten involved. Glenn Stewart has done a good job with getting Google Plus site organized to get info out. He's also loading up videos on Google's website, the Google Plus Gulf War Illness site that he's set up. We're asking for other individuals to do a videotape of themselves much better if it's 10 minutes or less, because that gets the news out there around the world. It also impacts when we have to go to the Hill, okay? And if we had thousands and thousands of these unloaded, and, you know, we could point to it, then people that can't make it because they're too sick or they're not getting their compensation at least have a video that we can point to.
You know, don't you think people more or less give up because they see such lack of movement from the VA? You know, I work with young guys, and especially active duty right now, reservists, and also people who just come back from Gulf War and stuff. I mean, not Gulf War, but Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think when they go into a VA hospital and they start looking at people walking the walls of that hospital, these are veterans that have, you know, predecessed them, and they're walking around, and it looked like a bunch of zombies in there. Dr. Bart Billings was on Doug's program a while back, and he said that he talked to a psychiatrist that said that he usually has like 98% of his patients are on medications. And I think these young guys are losing hope because they think that's the best I'm going to get out of this deal.
Well, the thing is, what's happened to us, that's happened before, atomic vets, World War II, Korea, Vietnam vets, even when I got involved, and I got involved early, and Doug can tell everybody that how early I was out there, and I was out there earlier than when I met Doug. But what happens is you usually have a core group that are the, well, I guess call them hellraisers, kicking the doors and squeaky wheels, whatever you want to call us, rebels. And we've been the ones out there, but we've lost a lot of those people. I mean, Michael Woods died, Paul Lyons. I mean, we've lost quite a few of our initial group. And it takes us reaching out. And what I've always tried to do is reach out and get others involved, because it doesn't happen unless you have a massive movement. The Vietnam vets did that. The Vietnam vets that I met going up to D.C. were yelling at me, get these vets up here, Denise, get them up here. And I have tried since day one of being involved to have veterans involved, to somehow get them there, wheel them in, roll them in, you know, whatever. We did that with hearings with Shays Committee. And, you know, I laughed at Shays Committee. I said, yeah, we got Michael Donnelly testifying, Randy Abear, and they heard us about ALS, and the VA was jumping all over themselves. And I said, what do we have to do? Keep these hearings going month to month, year by year, in order to keep hammering them? And apparently that is what it takes.
Yeah.
You know, but the Congress loses effort. You have to keep plugging them to have a hearing. It's been a while since we had a hearing on Gulf War illness, and we have to go back up there and keep pushing. And
you know,
it behooves every vet to get involved. I said, set up a state Facebook page, Gulf War, Desert Storm, and your state, and at least get your state together and get people meeting together. Have a daggum paper drive or have a car wash so you can fund people to go. I mean, it takes all of us, is what I'm saying. It doesn't,
yeah.
It cannot just be one core little group. And we started way back, Prodigy Network, when I found it on the Internet, was I counted up at one time we had 93 of us online.
Right.
After that, we had email groups. We set up websites. We did everything we could. We had a faxing network, which Vietnam vets and POW activists use their fax networks to keep people informed. And what I noticed back, what I wanted to say and then shut up for a minute, was even when I got started, shortly after I came home, I was seeing the Vietnam vets kind of fade off from jumping up and down, okay? And that was, what, 92, 93 time period, which would have been, what, about 25 years after?
Right.
75.
Well, 1991 was 26 years after Vietnam ended, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you start seeing the motivation drop and people just saying, well, I'll take what I can get. And that's terrible. And that's why the social media sites are what we're using to try to activate people and say, you've got to keep fighting. You cannot give up. Right now, David Wynette set up a survey, and I followed him up, making a question and yes and no type thing. But what we're seeing is that we've battled from the first get-go that this was all stress. It was all PTSD, which is a lie. And in the beginning, that's the only way we could get anybody compensated was through PTSD. But as we went along, even now with all the hard research we have coming out, they still would much rather send somebody to the PTSD or the mental health people than to the physician to look at chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel. And, you know, so, and the doctors are not getting a education session for these exposures at all. And the vets get frustrated. They're being sent to mental health and being doped up on things that are probably detrimental to them versus helpful for the physical exposures.
You know, we've had hearing after hearing after hearing. You and I have participated. I mean, I distinctly remember an IOM hearing that Admiral Elmo Zumwalt with the PSOP, and we were working directly with him. And that morning, I remember we were like hunky-dory, cookies and donuts and loving each other. And he got up there and lied. Command Sergeant Major Frank Sauer got up there and told the truth. He was White House military and Command Sergeant Major. How they had absolutely used, and he had the documents, he had all the photographs, he had the medical evidence, how they had used depleted uranium, Israeli, in 73, 74. And then I got up there and laid everything out totally for them on what had happened with the DU project and the Chem Bio and everything. And then you got up there and you tied it all together, how to repair it, how to fix it.
They tried to shut me down, too.
and then when we got done with everything, and we had just literally, I mean, before, you know, we're lovey-dovey, I mean, the British were going nuts because we, you know, put all this out, information out. And it's still broken. Yeah. I mean, it just deliberately and willfully still broken. We look at the internal memorandum, and we've been sharing them, and thank God for Gary Nolan and Progressive Radio Network are putting the documents out there that we get. We've been handing those documents, internal documents, out one by one because the VAB wouldn't acknowledge them. The VSOs didn't have them, didn't know about it. We got two new VSOs here at the Danville VA, one for the VFW and DAV. Both of them were very sick. They'd never seen the documents until I put them in their hands. And they were astonished because one guy was a DU-friendly fire, and he didn't know about any of the stuff. Showed me the pictures from when he was in a hospital over there with a friendly fire, and then I gave him the medical directives and everything, and he was just like, oh, my God, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. But it's the frustration that I sense and that I hear, because I distinctly remember when we got appointed to the Center for Disease Control, I guess that's, what, 98 or 99, and he said to me, you and I first really worked together extensively. Tom was there. We had the command surgeon for the 82nd Airborne there, and Jimmy Toot on the Recall Commission, and I distinctly remember that Andres Kornig-Bopp and Tom and Herb Smith, these are all colonels, doctors, got up and told the truth because they were the ones that wrote the original reports. And the military had lied about what they reported in contract to what the original reports were. But then it was in the middle of the night, I think, and with Jim Toot, you and I, and Michael Kilpatrick are sitting there saying, we got to fix this, what we need to do. And almost had Mikey convinced to do it, and then all of a sudden he disappeared, and he came back and said, no, Bernie doesn't want to go along with it.
And, well, and, you know,
we took
every
steps group back,
of veterans
we went forward and fell backwards.
Yeah, I think every veteran era war has had this, okay? What I'm pushing for is vets, it's not only about getting your claim, it's about getting answers. That's why I push our gut researchers, you know, and I've got a list of some of those that are going right now that I want people to be aware of and go to. AirCompassionForVeterans.org will help try to get airline tickets because that's not covered. You know, travel's not covered. But I really want to mention some of those right now, if I may, Doug.
Absolutely. These are critical things because we know what biomarkers are out there, and if we get more proof, and what, I don't know how we're going to get the medical establishment or the IOM or CDC to acknowledge it because It's a whole toxic mess that we're encountering in the biological threats and the biological hazards today. I mean, it was on the news this morning. They're not even complying with the simplest things that we taught in the chemical, medical, management, chemical, biological hazard course, and they're looking at new epidemics.
These are studies that will get some of the testing done that we can't get done through the VA, okay? And a lot of these were funded through our effort to go to the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program that was initiated with the help from Dennis Kucinich and Senator Sanders, okay?
God bless those two.
So that's a yearly thing that we have to keep funding that, and it takes going to the Hill. Okay, I'm going to go through a couple of these, okay? For female Gulf War veterans, okay? Please get your pencil and paper out. I'm going to give you a phone number and a contact name. For female Gulf War veterans down in Miami, they are doing the study on our immune system for females, okay? The phone number, the contact person, is Fanny, F-A-N-N-Y, Collado, C-O-L-L-A-D-O, and that phone number is 305-575-7000, extension 6706 or 4942. That's for female Gulf War vets. Get your immune system, all the blood work done, and really looking in depth at that. Fanny Collado. Phone number, again, 305-575-7000, extension 6706, or 4942. Okay, the other big research that we have going on is a consortium study that I've mentioned before, and this is with Boston, with Dr. Kimberly Sullivan involved. It's with Miami, with Dr. Klimas' group involved. It is with Texas. Waco will be involved this coming year. But you go there, and I flew over there after the last rack early in the morning, and I was done and able to catch a flight back to D.C. that same day. So you go in. They meet you at the lobby of the university medical school there, and they take you up, and you have testing, neurocognitive testing. You have questionnaires to fill out, and then they do a physical on you, and then they collect blood and your sputum or saliva, medical term there, and the blood is going down to Dr. Klimas in Miami. The sputum is actually going over to University of Adelaide in Australia. They're looking at genetic biomarkers. And they will also do about an hour's worth of scans there at Miami. That's the only place doing the scans, I believe. Miami will be doing the blood and the saliva. I don't think they're doing scans, but they may be. They were trying to use just one machine, so it was a standard machine, so that it was a heavier weight. We need a total of 300 total for this study. Okay, so that's a big drive right now. The contact person, get your pencil and paper ready, Joanna Cirillo, C-I-R-I-L-L-O, C-I-R-I-L-L-O. The phone number is 617-638-5834. Let me repeat that, Joanna Cirillo. C-I-R-I-L-L-O, 617-638-5834. Now, you can also email them. Let me give you an email twice. And it's initials, all in caps, G-W-I-C, G-W-I-C, at BU.edu. So this is our first funded consortium study with Dr. Sullivan, Dr. Klimas, and within this year, Dr. Leah Still down in Waco will be getting involved. So we've got a female study going on. We've got the consortium going on. And with the consortium, once you do that, then they're going to call you back because they have three studies, one starting here in February. They'll call you back and have you come do a PET scan. They will also be taking blood for another project, really getting into funding genetic biomarkers and all. The other thing that will be coming up, the researchers doing this right now, is on maternity leave. So end of March, 1st of April, they'll be doing lumbar punctures with the spinal cord fluid. So those are callbacks from, but you got to be in the consortium study to be involved in these follow-on studies, okay? So this is the first funded consortium, including multiple universities outside of the VA. This is why I'm pushing it so hard, because Dr. Klimas is a leader in the field. So has Dr. Kimberly Sullivan and Leah Still. Those have been key people for us. Georgetown, we did a pre-recruitment. They were repeating the studies they've done in the past, being the fMRI, DT, and their lumbar puncture that were published, 2 years ago now. They got funded again to increase the numbers that have done that. We did in September and October. I pushed that number out, and what I was able to accomplish is we had pre-registration, which meant call in, give your phone number, give your email, email them, call them, and get on that list. We needed 40 or 50. So we populated that study even before they started. And I think the first person in that study is there right now. We still need to find some healthy vets to participate in that study. But the Georgetown study's up and running again. Right now they've got as many as they can handle. If we need more, I'll let you know the contacts and all that. We have other studies coming up, but they're not ready for people yet. Minneapolis is going to be doing more studies, Minneapolis VA, who are very good people. I've gone there and done it. They'll be doing their study again with the MEG machine, I believe, and some other work. Right now, Dr. Ron Bach, who is our hypercoagulation specialist for Guffaw illness, is doing the treatment trial there. Dr. Galam out in San Francisco will be busy. There's new studies coming up that I haven't put online yet. I have a Facebook page, Guffaw Illness Studies Recruitment. So y'all can ask to join that, and that's all I post there is just the studies, the info, get there, how to get there, how to call them, all that. On Guffaw Illnesses, and I primarily post there. And I'll bring those up again and again, you know, pushing them. And let me tell you, if I'm repeatedly pushing a study, it's usually after I've gone, after I know these researchers and who they are and what they're doing and how much I trust them, that's when I'm pushing them over and over again. I may list other studies and pop them up occasionally, you know, maybe one reason or another that I'm not pushing them as hard. It may be like the Boston has the LED-type lights, but it takes being local for that, multiple visits. And so I pop that up occasionally just to keep people aware of it if they're in the area and can get there multiple times. You know, the treatment studies, if you have to go in multiple times and travel's a problem, I don't push those as hard. But like right now, the consortium study, the immune study for the females, those are the two I'm pushing really, really hard because we already recruited and filled the slots for Georgetown. So people, if you're not on Facebook, get on Facebook, ask to join the Guffaw Illnesses, plural, illnesses site. That's where I always share with them. A lot of times I share it on my own page. And plus I have the special Facebook page for studies recruitment. There's other ways to find the info, but I try to make it really easy for the vets. I hunt and find all these and keep in touch with the researchers when they're ready. And I call and talk to them frequently. And then I, you know, get the info out. There's a lot of studies that I may post once in a while. I call them the studies that may help you short-term, yoga, acupuncture, things like that. The ones I really look at as a nurse that's suffering with a master's degree. I'm retired now, but the ones I really push, and I will go to at all costs, are the researchers I know that are looking at the hard, hard diagnostic work, the cutting-edge research, and good treatment trials that, you know, we need people to be involved with. Because that's where I think the headway will make. We've done a lot more in that area than the Agent Orange vets did, really looking to our researchers. And we've had dedicated researchers. They're not out to make money, people. They're not using us. We're not guinea pigs for them. They are trying to help us. I was up there at the very first meeting where we had researchers, and it was on the health consequences of the Gulf War, where I met Dr. Karini Boss and others back in April of 93, I believe it was. And through that, you know, there's some that got involved in or shortly thereafter trying to help us. They are trying to help us. Some of these researchers, we, in fact, have gone out and recruited. I recruited Dr. Bronick by seeing some articles and research papers on chronic fatigue on civilian population. And I was amazed at some of his work and called him. Got him invited to Iraq, got him involved. You know, I know that's where the breaking science is for us to find answers, to know more about our condition. You know, and a lot of vets just don't get it. Why do you push this research? I don't want to be a guinea pig. You're not being a guinea pig. You're helping yourself. You're getting more answers. You're there. You can talk to the researchers, get a lot more info about your own health condition. You're helping other vets, okay,
Denise,
by doing. Yes.
I guess, Doug, I work on probably the other end of this. I wish I had more information on the organizations that Denise is talking about, because the people, and I want to get that from you too, Denise, but what the people I'm talking to an audience tonight, a whole auditorium of people tonight, and I'm talking to them about substance abuse, because most of them have been involved in substance abuse, and they're trying to come out of that. And
yeah.
So I'm going to different organizations with that now. And a lot of these people are, they're either strung out on medications, they're strung out on drugs, they're strung out on alcohol, and all these things. And until you get their head right, Denise
yeah.
can't do a whole lot with these folks. They've got to get their
exactly.
heads right. So that is where I'm working at. And, you know, there's so many people in our world today that's so messed up, and they're looking for a way out. But they're trying to just get their cells fixed first. And I think once you get their head together, then I need the information to give them to become activists in exactly what you guys are doing.
It gives everybody a purpose in your life. I will tell you this. You may be sick, but you can do a lot. I watched it with the civilian chronic fatigue group that were out there before we came home sick. And I'm amazed. They may be laid up in bed, but they're up on their computer or on their iPads, which has made it easier for them
right.
to communicate, do efforts to raise money, to, you know, impact that. I learned from all these groups, be it veterans or be it associated civilian groups, of what you had to do to activate everybody. And I try to tell everybody, you got to get off substance abuse. You got to get clean. You got
to
get out of trouble.
You have to get your head together. You
yes.
can't think rationally.
That's
Most
right.
Most people
and
are self-medicating themselves anyway.
And yeah, so, and this is terrible. It's not helping them. It's hurting them.
No, it's not. It's not even helping the cause, because you
right.
can't be an activist until you quit doing what is destroying your life.
You
and
can't
so
help yourself.
That's what
you
I'm trying to do.
Family, you can't okay. help your community.
I mean, you got to come back.
I wanted to add one more thing, Doug. I think we've mentioned this before, but the treatment carts that got started years ago now. Maryland just got theirs started, and they've got one courthouse doing it, not my daughter's yet. I keep bugging her to bring it up to the judges there. But state by state, they're adding treatment courts of people that, veterans that have gotten in legal trouble from substance abuse mainly.
Right.
And they bring them in and get them a separate court, just like family court or adolescent court. There's special court for them to help them, and they have advocates, buddies that work with them to get them to the resources they need to get clean. The court's following them. The court gives them a sentence based on getting help and getting with their buddy and getting to the resources that are out there to stop substance abuse and to get them clean. And by doing that, they get off their, you know, jail time.
I've been involved in that where we've literally picked up vets and we made the coordination with medical authorities where we picked them up at the jail and delivered them to medical care. I mean, I've done that, and it's frightening to see what's happening. You've got to come back and look at the overall quality of life issues. I mean, one thing's just happened again with the Burn Pit Registry. Here we fought, we got it done. We got Matt Reinhart to set up the medical care if they can get there. But when the military and the VA are deliberately and willfully limiting the data entry, they don't have the information to come around. And this goes back to what's been going on from day one. We got the conscious decision made by, at that time, the Surgeon General for the U.S. military to disavow, disregard, and deny. We got the infamous Los Alamos memo, which was a direct order to lie on auto reports to avoid liability. I mean, Denise, you and I, when we presented by request the House Oversight Committee, the legal beagles up in the House were in there, and I remember them crying as they all of a sudden dawned on them how bad this really was. And the fact that medical problems were there, they were known, and treatments were intended and described, and there was a conscious decision not to do it.
Doug,
I'm hearing over and over again the vet is given up and the frustration that they're given. We've lost way too many friends that, you know, they gave up because they didn't have the fortitude or their ability. They didn't have the resource to fall back on when they had a bad day. And family after family, I mean, we're seeing the spouses affected. I mean, we've had report after report. We had local ones here where I actually measured the contamination at the installation, the base where the spouse was affected. We ordered it cleaned up, and they never cleaned it up. I mean, I did the inspection, made the recommendation, and it never happened. And that's the same base where Mike Donnelly got nailed.
Right.
And it's flustering beyond
Doug,
comprehension.
Yeah, Doug, if people are new, or if they were younger than we were, and that includes all of us as hosts today, but a lot of people never do look at history, okay? I caught a program late night on one of the history channels, and it was a man who no one ever knew, which was William Colby, who we know as CIA during the time of Vietnam. And through watching that program, it triggered a lot of my memory cells from history that I've read. And the fall of the Diem brothers in Vietnam and how he tried to prevent that. The Henry Cabot Lodge was the person kind of running that show at that time. And, you know, the names that pop up, I never want to see these names in any of our committees. I never want to see them on the Hill again. But it's people like Cheney, Rumsfeld. The Bushes were in that. Okay.
The Clintons.
You look at history and you see these names that have been there for years. They know the history better than we do. They lived it, okay? And it filtered over to the Gulf War in 1991. They were there for the Iraq invasion in 03, Cheney, Rumsfeld. You look at some of the congressional and senators and go back and pull up, and there's pictures of Saddam Hussein with some of these people, okay? The political situation at the time was we'd balance Iran and Iraq, okay? So we dealt with the bad people, okay? And it's like we create these messes, and we have to educate the public. You know, we have to educate the public. When you're voting, please know the history of the guys that you are putting down to vote for. It's all I'm saying. I'm not going to say, you know, don't go Republican or whatever. I'm saying you've got to look at it. And what I see over and over again, it seems like one party, more than the other, is all for going to war. And yet, when we turn to them for help, when we come home, they're not the ones standing up for us.
You know, Denise, we're about time out of time, but I mean, it's 25 years ago, as you said, you landed in Iraq about 25 years ago to the day during the Scud attack. What were you thinking as you came in and the missiles are flying in as you get off the airplane and dive for cover?
Yeah. We were at Dover when the president spoke. We got, we were inbound. We had left San Antonio, and we landed at Dover, and everybody was landing at the East Coast bases and being held up. And the reason why, they were launching the war, okay? So all the airfields in Saudi Arabia and the adjoining areas where we had planes at, bed down locations and all, were busy as everything. So they couldn't keep the incoming coming in. So they had to wait for lulls. I mean, we had people have to turn around in the air from Germany and then come back through because we hit Germany before we flew in. And
well,
now
we're out of time again. We got to continue this next week. Ray, you can help us. Denise, we'll talk to you. Thank you. God bless America, and we got to force this fix finally once and for all. Thank you, and good evening.